and also co-chairman of Growth Energy. Todd Becker, CEO of Green Plains Renewable Energy, and also a board member of Growth Energy. And former Congressman Jim Nussle, who was also the former director of the Office of Management and Budget, and a Growth Energy board meeting member as well. EPA's announcement today approving up to E15 for 2,000 and newer vehicles is an important first step in a historic decision. This is the first crack in the blend wall since it was created in 1979, 32 years ago. Today's decision will apply to anywhere from 40 to 60 million vehicles that are 2007 and newer, nearly 20% of the U.S. fleet, and over a third of the fuel consumed. EPA, as you know, deferred the decision on vehicles manufactured 2001 through 2006 until the Department of Energy completes testing in next month. We expect those remaining tests to be positive. Based on the extensive data we submitted with Growth Energy's Green Jobs waiver in March of 2009. Approval of the 2001 and 2006 fleet will add an additional 86 million cars eligible to use E15. Together, 2001 and newer vehicles means that roughly 55% of the current auto fleet, 139 million out of 230 million in the fleet, would be eligible for E15 and an even higher percentage of fuel use. Ultimately, for next year is that every vehicle on the road 10 years old or newer is eligible to use E15. Not a small market whatsoever. And this number will grow by 10 to 15 million vehicles annually as new cars are purchased in this country. We still believe that the data we submitted with our waiver in 2009 demonstrates and proves that blends of up to E15 are okay to use in all vehicles and off-road equipment, and that would have been our preference. However, EPA has determined that the government tests being conducted by DOE are important in granting the decision to include those autos. And we would urge, after the November tests and waiver decision is being made, for EPA and DOE to move forward expeditiously on testing older vehicles so that ultimately they can all be included. EPA's proposal on labeling of the fuel at retail stations is also very important in this process. It will give all stakeholders an opportunity to comment on how to prevent misfueling and liability. You've heard all the critics speculate about misfueling, but I will remind everyone, this is not the first fueling change our country has gone through. We successfully transitioned from leaded to unleaded a few years ago, and in fact, currently on the market today, there are two types of diesel fuels in the marketplace based on the age of the diesel engines and the vehicles. I'm confident we can make this change work as well. The waiver decision today will not result in E15 in the marketplace tomorrow. First, the E15 decision is voluntary. And second, there are other regulatory measures that must be cleared, including fuel certification, registration, state regulatory changes that we can now begin to resolve to expedite the process after the November decision is made. While some will look at this whole effort by EPA as a glass half empty, we at Growth Energy view the decision as a glass half full, an opportunity to expand and tear down the blend wall. While we have, again, preferred approval for E15 for all vehicles and off-road equipment, now we must roll up our sleeves and make this split decision work and continue to move forward in the future. While this is a crack in the blend ball, we will not rest until the wall comes down entirely. Again, today's announcement is a historic first step Ethanol reduces our dependence on foreign oil, strengthens our national security, cleans up our air, and creates jobs right here in America that cannot be outsourced. This is a win for America. At this time, I want to turn it over to Jeff Breun, CEO of POET, which is the nation's largest ethanol producer, and also co-chairman and co-founder of Growth Energy. Jeff?
Thank you, Tom. As Tom said, I'm the CEO of POET. The approval of E15 for 2007 and newer vehicles represents the first increase in ethanol content in 35 years. It is an important first step toward allowing American ethanol to compete with gasoline. The science overwhelmingly supported the EPA's decision, just as it supports use of E15 in older vehicles. With the expected approval for 2001 to 2006 vehicles later this year and continued testing of the legacy fleet, today's announcement sends a signal that government is serious about increasing renewable fuel use and continuing to develop cellulosic ethanol. My company has spent tens of millions of dollars and more than a decade working on cellulosic ethanol, and we expect to break ground on our first commercial facility as soon as financing is secured. However, it would be irresponsible to invest more than $200 million in a facility that turns out a product with no market. Approval of E15 helps build our company's confidence that there will be room in America's gas tanks for American cellulosic ethanol. It also ensures that our country won't go backward on the progress we've made with corn ethanol, the only biofuel that is currently displacing large volumes of imported oil. 2 years ago, POET joined with several other ethanol producers to form Growth Energy to deal with the tough issues facing an expanding ethanol industry. We thought that the industry needed a new, aggressive voice to speak out on behalf of America's ethanol supporters. Today's approval of E15 is a validation of the decision to found Growth Energy and is a victory for the entire ethanol industry and our country. With that, I'd like to introduce to you Todd Becker, CEO of Green Plains Renewable Energy, a co-founder of Growth Energy.
Thanks, Jeff, and thanks, everybody, for joining us today. It is an exciting day for the industry. I'm going to speak briefly on the impact to ethanol production companies, some of the market dynamics, and a little bit on what it means to the consumer. The ethanol industry has invested over $25 billion over the last several years when the federal government started the initiative to reduce our dependence on foreign oil and reduce tailpipe emissions. This investment, contrary to popular belief, came almost solely from the private sector. Alongside this, the RFS program established to help create and incent market acceptance and demand for what today is almost 10% of the United States motor fuel market. There is no other renewable energy industry in the world that has moved to commercial scale and has given a consumer a choice at every corner of our country. But as an industry, we can do more. As Jeff has also said, the RFS2 has asked once again the private sector to supply 36 billion gallons of renewable motor fuel to the U.S. consumer. This did not match up with the 10% maximum allowable blends, and this needed to be reconciled. With the announcement today, it will provide certainty that ethanol is a permanent and growing piece of our energy needs. It also tells the investment community that this is an expanding sector of our energy economy, and investing in the U.S. renewable energy market, especially ethanol, is a stable and growing opportunity. Over the last several years, producing ethanol has become much more modern and efficient, and we now compete on a global scale today as well. This is really all about access to market and regulatory certainty. This is the biggest challenge we have faced. The expanded blends is the start, and Growth Energy Fueling Freedom Plan is the end game. The EPA decision today now starts to give certainty around infrastructure investment that needs to be made to allow access to this blend by the consumer. The biggest challenge we have faced as an industry is market access. It is controlled by big oil, and they have mandated that consumers use 90% oil-based gasoline. This announcement starts to allow the consumer to have a choice when they fill up and drive more demand for U.S.-made fuel versus foreign-sourced oil-based gasoline. Finally, let me talk a few minutes discussing underlying market dynamics. We have seen, as you all have, a rapid rise in prices over the last several weeks. This is due to several factors, all of which are not market-based realities. We are currently harvesting one of the largest crops in history. While we may have tighter ending stocks than expected, the USDA still reported over 900 million bushels in their last report, which is adequate after feeding our animals, producing food, and producing fuel. All of this is while we are still exporting over 2 billion bushels of corn to foreign countries, which, by the way, is the equivalent of 5.5 billion gallons of fuel. It has been proven over and over again that high corn prices had limited impact to food prices in 2008, as the price of energy was the biggest culprit. In fact, the World Bank recently issued a report verifying this. A larger and more troubling fact in the current agricultural markets is the record speculative length. Currently, between index funds and large speculators, these parties now hold 4.5 years of United States ending stocks in corn, or almost the equivalent of all of the corn used for ethanol production in 1 year. These groups will never consume or take delivery of any agricultural product and have no incentive to do anything but push prices even higher. This needs to be reconciled, and at some point, the transfer of this ownership can be very disruptive to orderly markets for users and producers. On a final market note, even with higher input prices, ethanol remains at a wholesale price discount to gasoline in all of 2011. We remain the cheapest alternative to motor fuel in the world as well, and compete with other foreign sources of ethanol on a global scale. We commend the EPA, DOE, and the administration for starting the process of allowing for additional consumer choice in the motor fuel market, and continue to focus on clean burning alternatives to foreign sources of oil. I'll now turn it over to Jim Nussel to give his final thoughts as well.
Thanks, Todd. And again, thank you to Jeff and to Tom and to Todd for their leadership in putting together Growth Energy and making a day like this possible. I mean, I realize EPA is treating this day appropriately as a technical decision based on a waiver request, but I mean, this is a 30-year energy issue that has really come to a head today, and I think this is very exciting. It's an exciting energy decision, and it has the potential of being an enormous economic decision for our country. I mean, first and foremost, giving America a choice in the kind of fuel that we're putting into our vehicles. So I think this is an exciting day. The economic order of magnitude here is really gigantic. Today's decision, as has been said, affects 40 to about 65 million vehicles, nearly 20% of the current U.S. fleet, and a third of the fuel consumption. That right there is enormous. A second decision on cars from 2001 to 2006, if EPA, as they indicated, will make that decision by the end of this year, another 86 million cars could be included on that as well. So while today is a first big step, we are, I certainly am very confident that not only will the newer vehicles be included here, but based on this, we see a real upside for older vehicles as well. Moving to E15 is not only supported, as EPA indicated today, by sound science, but the economic models are staggering. It shows economic studies that I've seen show that this creates more than 136,000 new jobs just with E15, and it injects about $24 billion back into the U.S. economy instead of letting it bleed overseas. It displaces about 7 billion gallons of gas from imported oil. But, I mean, the jobs numbers, especially at a time when we're talking, you just go race by race across the country, Americans want to hear about jobs. They want to talk about jobs. They want to understand from their leaders how they're going to create jobs. Today, EPA, I think, did an enormous service in creating jobs of the future when it comes to domestic energy. This replaces the E10 standard. I mean, this is a 1970s solution to the oil crisis way back then that was created by OPEC. And we're now sending, by the calculations I've seen, about $300 billion of our resources, much of it borrowed, unfortunately, overseas to places where, you know, frankly, places like OPEC, countries that are involved in OPEC, are not looking out for our best interests. So today we are making an energy choice, and it's, I think, certainly as Tom and Todd and Jeff have said, it's a first step. But I'll tell you what, every long journey begins with a first step, and today
That step is made, and it's an exciting one at a time when America needs an economic shot in the arm. And let me turn it back now to Tom for any closing arguments.
Well, thank you, Congressman, and thank you, Jeff and Todd. We view this as a historic first step in cracking the blend wall, and we're going to continue to work. We're going to work through the challenges in getting this into the marketplace and all the regulatory hurdles we have to clear. And I think Congressman Nussel said it best, every long journey begins with the first step, and this is an important first step. Now I'll turn it back to the operator for questions.
Thank you. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically.